Well, first of all, let me thank everyone here for giving a few moments of your day, and thank you to the Philadelphia Society for extending the invitation. It's an honor to be here. But before I begin, I just wanted to say my original title for today's speech was Turn Off the TV and Read Some Books. That's how we're going to reach the future generations. But the problem is this. I just got back from a road trip to Yellowstone with my 6-year-old and my 8-year-old. And I discovered in 40 hours of driving, it took 35 hours of TV watching before they lifted their head and looked out the window. So we can't win that battle. We have to think about why it is that the youth are uninterested in these ideas, are uninterested in federalism. And the reason is the reason why they watch TV. They want drama. They have passion. Think about how we were in high school. Everything mattered. So as important as all the different levels of policy issues that can arise in the context of federalism are, if you want to grab the youth, and besides doing some education, which is absolutely essential, but if you want to grab the youth, it's all about big ideas, big reforms, not just saying no, but having affirmative policies and affirmative goals that can actually change the world. That's how you grab the youth. And you got to address the core problem they face, which is this. Folks, the reality that our kids face is that all of their assets are being mortgaged without their consent. The amount of federal debt spending that has been going on now for decades is absurd and clearly unsustainable. If you want to grab the kids, you need to point this out to them. Now, some wise guy in the audience is probably going to say, well, that wasn't inflation adjusted. Well, this is the current federal debt as a percentage of GDP. The last time that the federal debt was here was World War II. The difference is, though, even if we had the economic explosion that we saw after World War II, we've already mortgaged our assets because it's just the tip of the iceberg with this debt figure. Lawrence Kotlikoff, formerly of Boston University, has estimated that unfunded liabilities at the federal level exceed $220 trillion. Even if somehow, through some magical change in policy, we saw the growth that happened after World War II, our assets, our kids' assets, are mortgaged. The other thing that we need to grab our kids with is a recognition as to why federalism is necessary, why state sovereignty is necessary. And it's a very simple proposition. Washington will not change on its own. We've seen one political party controlling Washington come and go with their almost exactly similar promises, and no matter who's in charge, nothing changes. The debt spending continues to spiral out of control. The growth of the federal government continues to spiral out of control. Our freedoms continue to be diminished. The problem is Washington. Now, the reason why the problem is Washington is that the essence, the root of the cause, is the concentration of power. Why is that? Because when you centralize in one location all of the power of government and the unlimited power to borrow money from future generations who cannot vote, you've created a honeypot for special interests who will always have a bigger voice and more influence in that concentrated setting than the American people and certainly future generations. The concentration of power in Washington must be divided. But how? We know this much. Congress is not going to tie its own hands. Every time Congress has come up with a balanced budget amendment idea, something to try to rein in their debt spending, it has loopholes you can drive a truck through. Whether you look at the Republican versions or you look at the Democrat versions, they are meaningless. Congress will never limit its own power. Human nature is corrupted by power. We need something else. Now, what we don't need is nullification. As popular as this movement has become, we know one thing about nullification. Whether you think that it's a viable constitutional theory or just a means of civil disobedience, you can't nullify a credit card. You can stand there and demand that the federal government stop encroaching on state sovereignty all day and all night and maybe even sit down in front of a tank somewhere, and you're not going to stop the credit card. Nullification is not the answer. What we really need is a balanced budget amendment that divides power once again, that sets back the balance that the founders originally struck before the 17th Amendment took the states and their representatives out of Washington. As you may recall, there was a time under the original design when state legislatures appointed U.S. senators, and that ensured that there was no federal government that was able to act freely without some counterbalance from the institution that was closer to the people. But how do we do this? Well, you need to have an actual debt limit that means something, but you also got to recognize that it's going to take some time to get this spending spiral under control. So you give Congress some time. But here's the critical point of leverage that we need to strike at the root of concentrated power. Let's take the debt limit issue out of Washington. Having the debate over whether to raise the debt limit take place in Washington year after year is like having a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at the local bar. It's not going to achieve anything. It's never going to curtail their debt spending. We need to take that power out of Washington, give back to the states a small portion of the power that they held when they were in control of the Senate. We also need someone in the executive branch who's accountable. We need to have the president on the line, his job subject to impeachment, if the debt limit is accidentally breached. And we need to make sure that whatever we do to balance the budget, we've actually address the core problem, which is a spending problem. So there needs to be some targeting of whatever we do to balance the budget to spending, and we can do that through a supermajority provision on tax increases. However, we need to also recognize that our tax system's a mess, and we need a structural reform that will encourage new tax policies that ensure a fairer, flatter tax code, even at the risk of increasing revenue. So one of the concepts in this idea is to have an exception from the supermajority requirement for closing loopholes and for switching to a national sales tax. We're not going to get that from Congress, but there is a way to get it from the states. The founders included in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution the ultimate power for states to leverage. And that is the power to amend the Constitution. What's stunning is, in a discussion of federalism, at least as I've seen on the list of agenda items, there has been no discussion of this ultimate power. If we want state sovereignty to truly rein in a federal government, what better way to do it than to strike at the source of federal power, to amend and reform a constitutional document that we can see clearly now has a hole, in that there are no limits on debt, unlike 49 state constitutions. And we know this much, without the state's ability to originate amendments, it's not going to get done. The key thing to understand about the power to originate constitutional amendments from the states is it was a critical component of the bargain for ratification. It was so important, indeed, that it was the exclusive topic of the last of the Federalist Papers, Federalist 85. In Federalist 85, Alexander Hamilton responded to Patrick Henry and others who opposed ratification by promising that if we got it wrong, if we concentrated too much power in the hands of the federal government, the states could use Article 5 to originate amendments to restrain that federal government. The Constitution would not have been ratified had this power not been given to the states. Now, maybe I don't have to emphasize this, but for future generations, we need to make this clear. It's important to engage the states for three basic reasons. One, state legislatures are closer to you. just try to make an appointment with Senator McCain versus your state legislator. Secondly, state legislators are earlier in their political career. Their constituents matter more to their ambition. And thirdly, when you decentralize power over things like the incurrence of debt, you enhance the relative ability of the people who overwhelmingly oppose limitless federal debt spending. You enhance their ability to compete in the marketplace of ideas relative to special interests who have the advantage in one point of leverage when all of the debate takes place in Washington, D.C. But the problem is Patrick Henry, in his 25-page speech during the Virginia Convention, had a point. Patrick Henry opposed ratification despite Article 5 because he said it was impossible to use. It was impractical. It was really a ruse. Today, using Article 5 requires over 100 legislative acts at the state and federal level. It requires first 34 states to pass resolutions calling for a convention that would amend the Constitution. It requires Congress to enact a resolution calling the convention. It requires at least a simple majority of states to actually appoint delegates to go to the convention, each one of which requires a legislative enactment. Even if something is generated and nothing is guaranteed, Congress still has to pass a resolution to refer that amendment back out to the states for ratification. And then it takes 38 more pieces of legislation to actually ratify any amendment that has been generated this way. Now, this is a Rube Goldberg's machine. And Patrick Henry had a point. Until now. Now, the Goldwater Institute scholarly research in the Federalism DIY report advocates combining state sovereign powers and maximizing their effectiveness. And one way to do that is to use the Interstate Compact to coordinate the use of Article 5. What is an interstate compact? It's an agreement among the states to act collectively in an organized fashion. It's a contract. You can use a compact to consolidate everything in the Article 5 process in two pieces of legislation, one for the states and one for Congress. First, in the state compact, you can include the amendment. You can create a commission that will organize the logistics and oversee the process. You can include the application to Congress nested in that one compact. That application can be designed to go live only when 38 states join. When that goes live, Congress can have a counterpart resolution that already contains the call for the convention, which could be then triggered automatically. The compact can lay out the delegates and who they will be. The compact can identify all of the convention rules, how the vote is to be conducted, what the agenda is. The compact can lay out an agreement among the states not to ratify anything other than the balanced budget amendment or the particular amendment idea that is contained within the compact. And then finally, the counterpart congressional resolution can also contain, like any omnibus form of legislation, a referral of that text, of that amendment, automatically if it is generated by the convention. And then finally, the compact can preload, front load, a ratification by all the states that have joined it, which is only effective if and when Congress refers it back under the counterpart congressional resolution. This makes it relatively easy. But more importantly, it answers all of the scholarly disputes. It tells us what the logistics are. It tells us who decides logistics. It tells us what keeps the convention on target. And if I have more time in the question and answer period, I'll be happy to go through each of these point by point. But the bottom line is, by combining an interstate compact with Article 5, you can fully determine every question that has ever been raised about the Article 5 process as a matter of both state and federal law, because under current precedent, if Congress consents to the compact, it is treated as the equivalent of federal law. This resolves all of the outstanding scholarly disputes. It's also realistic. You go from over 100 pieces of legislation to just 38. You also end up with a product that legislators understand better than Article 5, because there's already 200 compacts in existence. The average state is a party to 20 or more compacts, and the topics for these compacts range from the extradition of prisoners to military alliances to repel invaders. So the idea of a compact is familiar. Another great feature of the compact idea that we've developed is that the governors would be the delegates. The reason for this is simple. Try herding 7,500 cats. There needs to be a leader in each state to take this approach and actually make it practical. Not only that, but the benefit of having the governor go is that he is clearly a representative of the state as a whole. We've done polling. When you explain to ordinary American citizens what a compact is, that it's simply an agreement to do something in a more coordinated fashion among the states, we find that 2-to-1 citizens favor the use of a compact to originate constitutional amendments, bypassing Washington. So if you want to know how to engage the youth, this is the kind of idea that will set hearts and minds afire when passion, when reform, when real change for the better is what motivates them. And so I would urge everyone here to consider joining the initiative, and I'd be happy to take any detailed questions during the question period. Thank you.